Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Did you enjoy our live stream, Brown John? If so, there's another one coming up on the 22nd of April.
If you didn't see it because you were busy or just an idiot, then you should check it out, because the reviews we got for the first one were sensational.
Find out more about it on our Twitter, and also you can get your tickets. What's our website called again?
TFTimeMachine.com.
Yeah, yeah, tickets are available there.
The links will be out there, yeah.
22nd of April, 7 p.m. Loads of great stuff. Get involved.
Here we go. Here we go, here we go, here we go, here we go, this is it!
This is Top Flight Time Machine. I am Andy Dawson, pow, pow, pow.
I'm Sir Mr. Delaney, so what?
It's the Keegan Hamburg Odyssey episode something or other, can't remember where we're up to. We're about halfway through the thing, I think. It's Kevin Keegan in Hamburg, and Brian Moore is there for 3 months, apparently, tracking his every move.
Dr. Death, like a spectre, yeah, on his shoulder.
Yeah, yeah, except we never see him. But, you know, we'll fall for the conceit that they've sold us. I can't remember what we got up to at the end of the last one. I think we were on the plane still, weren't we? With Harry.
Yeah, we're in with the Harry, jet. His business manager. They're flying over to his boot sponsor in France.
Nantes.
And on the way, they're managing to fill the time with a discussion of other commercial opportunities and Kevin's schedule, which is...
That was it.
I get exhausted just listening to his schedule. The thing, and I've mentioned this before, that is astonishing, and this is, forgive me, listeners, this is a briefly serious point, I suppose.
Uh-oh.
Well, it's just the fact that he's got all this shit going on, right? And he doesn't have a spare second in the day, as Gene mentions a lot.
Well, this is what happens when you've got an electric mouse.
Yeah, exactly, when you've got an electric mouse in your house. An electric mouse in my house. My Story by Gene Keegan. God, I can't wait to deep dive that book. Right.
Lawyers will have to go over that before it gets published.
Fucking hell, I'd love to if Jean Keegan wrote a book. Her perspective on this whole life. It'd be great. I might actually approach her and suggest it. I'll help her ghostwrite it. But anyway, I mean...
I don't think that'll go very far.
What's incredible is... What's that, Jean? You're out in a book. Jean, what is the meaning of this? That's not how this family functions. If there's a book to be written, I'll be writing it. Right. No, it's just the fact that he's doing all this shit, and some people, as he sort of alludes to, like suggest that he's like a sellout or whatever because he's so commercially minded. But the whole time, he is leading this Hamburg team, this previously unsuccessful Hamburg team, to like European Cup finals and Bundesliga titles, right? So he's playing, he's squeezing games in between all this other activity, but in every game, he's delivering a 10 out of 10 performance. Was this when the electric mouse was at his most electric in his whole career?
It was, because he won the European Footballer of the Year on the back of it, didn't he?
Yeah. Did he win it twice? He won it once, right? Maybe.
The Liverpool thing, he was part of a greater project. He wasn't dragging them to glory, which he did in Hamburg. And then he kind of did it at Southampton, but not to the same levels or the same heights. So this is peak mouse, isn't it?
Peak mouse.
The Hamburg era. Yeah.
Yeah. Squeak, squeak.
Squeak, squeak. So, and he's on the plane with Harry, and they just had the discussion about Margaret Thatcher and the Conservatives and all that sort of thing.
Which was
covered last... No. My father would be turning in his grave. But then Harry says, tomorrow we've got to be at the Inn on the Park with EMI about the record. So Head Over Heels is about to be launched.
The
so
Yugoslavs.
It's all going on.
The Yugoslavs are in town.
The Yugoslavs have got the 7 inches back from the factory, so the single's ready to launch, I think. He says, all the press will be there and some of the disc jockeys. The disc jockeys are going to be there.
Oh, for the launch. Will DLT be there? What about Simon Bates? I like him.
How about Kenny Everett? He's a laugh. He goes too fast sometimes, to my liking, though. He said, Harry says, we'll stay there till about 4 p.m. and then we've got to join the England party at about 6 p.m. So Harry's got his deer. So he's going from Nantes to London to and launch his record the next
day. And then
day.
To Burnham Beaches, presumably, which is where England used to get together, didn't
that's
they?
That's where they used to, yeah. And oh, but then Kev, a word of caution from Kev, he says, I don't want to be late this time because I was late last time. It's just not on. Otherwise, great.
He's got a chief executive's mindset, like, yeah, where they speak just in very short, sometimes they don't even bother with full sentences, yeah, because it's all about maximising every time and every word. So it's quite, yeah, a good response, isn't it? Like, don't want to be late this time, late last time, otherwise, great. Good night. Quick power nap. Immediately switch off. I'll reconvene this meeting in 90 seconds after I've had my deep sleep.
After I've recharged my electric batteries.
After I've regenerated.
But then he gives an assessment of everything. He says, after he says, otherwise, great. He says, the day sounds good and interesting, which suits me. They're his favourite things. Yeah. They're his favourite descriptions of a deer. Good, yeah, and interesting. And interesting.
That's what he always says on his birthday to Gene. What do you want to do for your birthday? As long as it's good and interesting, Gene, I don't mind. I just want a good, interesting day. Don't we all, though, mate? I want a good, interesting day every day.
And she did. She booked me an upward top bus trip around Hamburg with all the tourists. It was good and interesting.
I learned a hell of a lot.
And then Harry says, we've got to go to Barcelona. For some fucking reason. And Kev says, oh, that'll get a few people talking.
Oh, yeah.
And Harry says, it's nothing to do with the club. The press and the TV want you there. We've appointed a new distributor. I don't know what that means. A distributor for what? What are they distributing and what are they doing in Barcelona with it? What's
it's
going on?
It's not this fanny powder again, is it?
It might
remember,
well be.
It was in this period where his German neighbour or one of his teammates introduce him to Kuntensprinkel.
We think so. Mm. Well, I don't know. But he had a German doctor living next door to him, didn't he?
That's it, yeah.
I think that might have been him.
They're a German couple who were middle-aged but quite open sexually, like a lot of the Germans are.
Yeah.
They're very liberal, much more liberal than Gene and I. I mean, we know what we like and we stick to it quite consistently.
We know our limits. I think that's the key.
But the Germans, they've got a very different approach to marital relations.
We like to keep it good and interesting, but nothing more.
Nothing fancy. No frills.
Let's say nothing after 11 p.m. if you know what I mean. So they've got this new distributor, and Harry says, "I think it's important we can get down there just for about 3 or 4 hours." But then Kev, there's a bit of dissent. He sighs and he goes, "You know my opinion on that. We've got 2 important league games left in Germany. We've got a very important European Championship game against Bulgaria. You say it's only 4 hours. 4 hours and a hell of a long way to travel." So he doesn't want to go to Barcelona for 4 hours. It'll just be pressing the flesh, wouldn't it? Meet and greet, all that sort of thing.
Which is exhausting, because you've always got to be on. When Keegan turns up, people want him to be Keegan, you know? Mm.
And I'm not sure if it's good or interesting, so he might not like it. But he says, with every contract we sign, great. The more days we tie up, the less time I've got at home. So he wants to be at home. It's a little bit like Elvis and Colonel Tom, I think. With him and Harry. That's how I see it. And Colonel Tom's beginning just to slightly take things over and have a little bit too much creative control into Kev's life. Soon he'll be making films about surfing and stuff like that instead of playing football.
Now, I can't remember if I mentioned this, Kevin, but on Thursday week, we've got to go to Las Vegas to make your new film. Viva Keegan a la Vegas. Right? What the hell's that? Well, you play a showman down on his luck in Vegas, and he falls in love with a croupier, right? And no, I haven't got time for this. Hamburger playing Leverkusen on Friday.
Harry,
how am I going to get back in time for that?
A film? A film? How long is it going to take to make a film? It'll only take 4 hours, don't worry.
What about the travel to Vegas? Can't they build a pretend Vegas somewhere closer to home?
In the Black Forest.
Aloha from Hawaii's next. But we're going to film that on a German beach and just light it heavily.
Yeah, it feels as if Kev's starting to rebel a bit against Harry's... I've just remembered someone messaged us or tweeted us and said that Harry later became Ryan Giggs's manager.
Bloody hell. He looks quite old in this.
Yeah.
But in the 70s, everyone looked 20 years old.
Everyone
didn't
did, yeah. Yeah.
Because of the pies.
I'm going to just have a little search, see if I can find anything about that. But yeah, I mean, Harry, to me... I haven't watched it for a couple of weeks, but he looked a bit like the Major from Fawlty Towers.
He did, yeah, that's how
with
I imagine.
A bit
imagine
more facial
him.
Hair.
Quite but, a big elaborate moustache he had, didn't he?
I can't imagine.
I reckon Harry, I mean, he did work hard, to be fair. He wasn't like, it wasn't an easy living because there was so much arranging to do, but it wasn't a bad life he was leaving, was it? I mean, how did he worm his way in with Keegan in the first place?
Well, on Ryan Giggs' Wikipedia page, it was Harry. Harry Swales is his name. Harry Swales, and Brian Robson recommended that Ryan Giggs sign up with Harry Swales, the agent that he himself had inherited from Kevin Keegan. So Kevin Keegan must have left Harry Swales
in
to Brian
will.
Robson in his football will. When you retire, you must have a football will.
And you know, when he issued that will, he read it out just before boarding that helicopter on the St. James's Park pitch. Right.
Yeah.
I am now, as far as football's concerned, I am dead. I will go into hiding and withdraw completely from public life. You will never find me. In fact, he was going to Marbella, I think, wasn't he? Didn't he go to, was it Mallorca or Marbella or somewhere?
Yeah, I mean, he probably thought he had some kind of, like, bat cave somewhere that he was going to retire to.
So, I hereby read my final will and testament. My commercial manager, Harry Swales, I leave to Brian Robson of Manchester United. Brian Robson sat there watching your thing. It's weird, I barely know Kevin, but, you know, fair enough, I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth, like.
Fucking hell. So, Harry Swales was still Ryan Giggs' agent in 2011 when Harry was 85 years of age.
Legend.
This is amazing.
Sounds like a human of honour to me.
This is, it definitely does. Well, I don't know. Is he still
might
around?
Be dead.
There's no sign that he's dead. So that means Harry Swales, if he's still going, is now 94.
You know what I'm thinking, mate? Not just human of honour. Could we get Harry Swales to be Top Flight Time Machine's new commercial manager?
Oh, yeah.
We could get him
definitely.
To interface with the Latvians, arrange live shows. All of our commercial activity surrounding the podcast, you know, like when we did that deal with the coffee/pet shop, right? That was a Keegan that was borderline Keegan-level commercial relationship we established there. And I think that there's so much now coming in that we need a Harry Swales. And I would love to appoint a 94-year-old Harry Swales to be Top Flight Time Machine's manager. It'd be fucking brilliant, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, he'd want a massive cut, I reckon. He'd want a massive cut because, you know, that you don't get the Swales experience on the cheap or for free.
No. Yeah, he'd want a cut, but he would argue, like all of these people do, that if he takes 10%, his activities would be earning us an extra 20% anyway, so we're up on the deal.
Are we, though? Are we going to be a 94-year-old Harry Swales?
Does a 94-year-old Harry Swales have the same logistical know-how as a Andy Dawson in his prime? Andy Dawson in his logistical prime.
Yeah.
Would you say you're in your logistical prime right now?
I couldn't really say it. I think I'm heading towards some kind of peak. Yeah. I don't know.
So you're the best. Well,
I still
put
care.
It this way, are you at the best you've ever been?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Logistically,
yeah,
are you better than you were in your 30s or before you had children?
Yeah. Oh, children changes everything because everything gets logistical when you have kids.
Yeah,
it's true. Because you've got a timetable, everything, and you know, you've got to work around their needs and all that. But two things, right. I've got the wisdom, which is always increasing. Every day I wake up and I want to learn.
Yeah.
And I want to know more.
First
and I
thing get you think is better. Logistics.
Yeah, I've still got that hunger and I've still got that drive. That's the second thing, actually. So, yeah. But, no, I haven't peaked yet. I don't think so. I've got another... What am I now? I'm 48 on Sunday. I reckon I've got another 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
And then I'll start to wind it down a bit.
And then you might just accept a lucrative offer from the Middle East or China to go and practice logistics out there.
Do some consultancy stuff, probably, yeah.
Be a bigger fish
in a... I don't really care that much.
Be a bigger fish in a smaller logistical pond, in a way.
Yeah.
You could be out teaching...
I'm not even ashamed to say that at some point I'll start to phone it in for cash.
Yeah.
I don't care. But,
just
you know,
offer logistics to other
we're
people.
We're all entitled to that.
Big corporations and stuff.
Yeah.
Well,
online logistic consultant.
I feel honoured to be working with you at this stage in your logistical profession, well, progression.
Of course you do. You're benefiting from it.
I am, yeah. So, Harry Swales.
Where are we?
They go to
I'm
France.
Just trying to
they land
stuff
in
about
France.
Harry Swales.
They land in France.
They land in France and the wind is howling and the rain's lashing down. And Kev jumps off the plane and he gives it all a bonjour, bonjour with all of them.
Yeah.
And then they go off to the factory where the boots are being made. And he walks at the factory and he walks past the clocking in machine.
Yeah.
And he takes someone's card and clocks in.
Yeah.
Which probably completely
fucks them
fucks
over.
Up.
Yeah.
Completely fucks up their admin and their HR. There'll be all
and,
kinds
and
of...
And probably
know.
That person ends up getting fired somewhere down the line.
Probably
all for
sacked.
The sake... All for the sake of a little stunt, a little attention-seeking stunt by Kevin.
Jean-Pierre, it says here you clock in at 9 o'clock, as is correct, but then you also clock in again at 11:30 a.m. What is going on?
You are taking...
Are you had someone clock in for you?
You are taking the piss, Jean-Pierre. We know what you are up to. This is the last straw. You are out. It was not me, monsieur. It was the Anglais. Monsieur
mouse.
Kevin Keegan. Ah, do not blame it on Monsieur Keegan.
Nonsense.
Keegan would not play tricks like that.
He is a professional.
He is a brand ambassador. He is European Footballer of the Year. He has not got time to be playing games with your clocking in card.
And your life. He knows better than that. He is a serious figure.
Jalapeño. Jalapeño.
I've just had an alternative thought. Perhaps when he realised he was going to this factory, perhaps he asked if there was a clocking in machine and if he could have his own card for when he visited.
Now, Harry.
He likes to keep it humble.
Yeah, in advance. Harry, this factory we're visiting in France, can you find out, just a small thing for me, can you find out if they have a clocking in system? And if so, could they have my own card ready for me so I too can clock in? It only seems fair. Plus, it'll be a wonderful opportunity for the photographers.
I don't want to seem like I'm better than these people. I want to feel like I'm one of them, and I want them to feel like I'm one of them as well. So I'll clock in just like they will.
And that's why
I'll be late.
That's why I'm turning up to work in massive bell-bottom jeans, a huge buckled belt, a sexy shirt undone to the navel, a medallion, and some aviator sunglasses. Just standard French factory workers wear.
You think I should arrive with a string of onions around my neck, Harry? They'd like that. That's what they do. Arrive on a bicycle.
Harry, I want you to
a beret.
I want you to arrange a tandem bicycle for you and I to ride in on.
I'll be at the front, obviously. So he clocks in. He'll have someone sacked. Oh. He immediately, all the factory workers are all gathered around
this
there.
This is
he
one
goes
of my favourite bits.
He goes up and he kisses two of them on the hand.
They're quite
and
elderly.
One of them on the cheek.
He chooses the more elderly women, doesn't he? And it is wonderful.
Yeah.
I was impressed because they're like these old women. They're, oh, giving
Oh, exactly, yeah.
And he comes in and gives it
he
the
knows exactly
both
what he's
barrels.
Doing, doesn't he?
Yeah, kisses their hands, kisses their cheeks, and they're blushing and cooing. And you just think, do you know what, Kev?
Slathers the charm on.
I just think, you're a great fucking guy. Do you know what I mean?
You're a showman.
He's not leaving anyone shortchanged, is he?
Yeah, exactly. It's just supposed to be a visit to have a look at some new boots.
Yeah.
He's flown down there. He's strolled in. had a go on the clocking in machine, kissed a couple of old women on the hand, and he's got them eaten out of his hand after that.
I mean, you know, fucking hell, I've met so many footballers who just go through, especially nowadays, they go through the fucking motions. And I suppose you can't blame them. They think, well, I got into this game to play football. Why should I also have to be this full-time kind of showman and celebrity? But they do tend to turn up and look like they're really, let everyone know how fucked off they are to be there. You know, the whole kind of Dr. Dre headphones routine. Do you know what I mean? Pretending they can't see anyone. Keegan is so the antithesis of the modern footballer in that sense. He's like, if anyone comes into contact with Kevin Keegan, they're going to leave with a smile on their face and a spring in their step. That's my guarantee. Yeah. That's what I owe the public. And, aside from his footballing talent, that was why probably he made so much money out of all this other stuff. Because he just made sure every fucker who ever met him loved him.
Well, it is. I mean, there's a little bit later on, which we'll come to. I've just been watching a bit more this morning, and he's talking about he doesn't understand why the England crowd love him so much. And he says sometimes he does things that are quite ordinary and they'll all cheer, then another player will do something extraordinary and they're not bothered. But it's because he does all of that. He gives it all the wink and, you know, a smile and tits and teeth and all that kind of thing. It gives them a bit more.
Yeah, and that goes a long extra. Way. It does, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like... it's like whenever we're out and about on tour and people come up to us in the street and say they're fans, you know, you'll often kiss them on the back of the hand.
I will, yeah.
And it's that they'll tell people about that. And then it'll get people interested and they'll want to listen to the podcast and then come to the live shows, subscribe to the IFS. And before you know it, you know, we're millionaires.
I've got an example here, but I'm in two minds as to whether to tell it because I'm not sure if it's appropriate nowadays. But... it's to do with Jimmy Savile, but as I've said,
before, I could always edit it out.
Okay, well, I've said.
Well, if you're tell it because it's a historical document.
Yeah, it's a historical document. All I'll say is that when I, as I've said before on these podcasts, I did spend a day with Jimmy Savile about 15 years ago. When I was interviewing him for The Guardian, I went and spent a day at his place in Leeds, at his penthouse, and then we went out afterwards. Because he wanted to take me to, they had a Jimmy Savile museum at some place in Leeds. It was like Leeds, was it the town hall or the library or something like that? But we went out, and when we were out in public, he did that thing of every single, obviously he's very noticeable because the way he dressed and looked, and every single person who came near to him, he would do that thing of trying to, he would go over and lay on the charm and speak to them and make sure that they knew they'd met and had an encounter with Jimmy Savile. And he kept saying to me, this will make that person's day. They'll remember that for the rest of their lives, right? And he goes, look at... And we were in a canteen bit of where the Jimmy Savile Museum was having a cup of tea, and there was an old guy who just looked quite lonely and fairly decrepit on his own up at getting himself a cup of tea. And Jimmy went, look at this old fella. He went, look at this old fella. I'm going to make his day. Right? I'm doing Kevin's voice. He's like, why don't this old fella? I want to make his day. How's about that? And he goes up and he just accosts this bloke. The bloke hadn't been looking at him at all. And he goes, hello, young man. Right? And he does a full sort of Jimmy Savile, a series of absurd jokes. And the man just looked a bit baffled and bewildered, to be honest. And he comes back and he goes, see that man there? He's probably about my age. But look at the difference between me and him. That's because I stay positive. But I've made his day there. He'll be telling everyone he knows about what just happened, right? And I'm thinking, to be fair, I don't think that bloke's got a clue who you are, mate. But another bloke came up to us.
Look, eccentric.
Another bloke came up to us and he said, can you... He said something like, he said, oh, it's a real pleasure to meet you, blah, blah, blah. My wife will never believe it. And he goes, I tell you what. He goes, call your wife, right? And so he called his wife and he said, this is... And he handed the phone over to him and she went, hello. And he went, oh. He goes, and he thinks he's going to say to him, oh, it's Jimmy Savile. But in fact, he just said something like, this is the Leeds Exotica massage parlour. We have your husband's phone. He left it here. And he also has £200 worth of unpaid bills. Can you please make sure he reports to us to collect his own and pay his bill? Hell. Then he gives the phone back laughing his head off. And the bloke just looks really fucked up about it. And again, he's turned to me. He's done the old TTFN. And he turned to me and went, oh, I've absolutely made that, guys. Him and his wife will be laughing about that. for the rest of their lives. They'll be telling the grandkids about it. I mean, I don't know about that, actually. No, he's got to come home.
He's gone home.
And she's gone. He's had to go, no. She's gone, I got a fucking message from someone at a massage parlor. Said you won't turn around.
It was Jimmy
Savile. No, it was Jimmy Savile. No one's going to believe that. It was Jimmy Savile playing a prank on me. He came up to me in the street and did it.
Bang over the end of the frying pan. Pack your fucking bag, son.
Anyway, no endorsements.
Yeah. There you go. I mean, the moral of the story there is Jimmy Savile destroyed lives in so many different ways.
Yeah. Yeah. Fucking did.
What a cunt. Mm. Anyway, where were we?
Back to the factory.
He's in the factory and he's kissing the backs of hands and one on the cheek as well. There's lots of larking about going on. He's on the boot leather cutting machine. He has a go on that. he trims the moustache of one of the workers. He's got some scissors and he gives him a little trim. And then he tries really to give him a little haircut.
While we're there, Harry, make sure that you provide me with some barber's scissors. Because there's a little thing I like to do where I go up and if there's anyone with a tash, I go and trim it for them. Just as a little bit of, you know, theatre.
I only do it with the Frenchmen, though, because they've got very, very lovely moustaches.
And they respond to it well, you see. The Germans or the English, they respond with a lot of hostility to that kind of thing. But the French, they love it.
Would you like me to do yours, Harry? Get back. Get off, Harry. He gets a bit of boot leather and he drapes it around one of the women workers' necks as she's sitting at a machine, like it's a garland or something like that around her neck, which is slightly creepy.
But she goes
along with it. She enjoys it. But he's having a lovely time. He's going in and he's doing what he has to do, isn't he? He's having a look at the boots, but he's also motivating the workforce who are making the boots for him. They'll work that bit harder now because Kev's been in and he's given them all a bit of a kiss.
Yeah.
And trimmed their moustaches. And there's a relationship there now. So, you know, that's the lesson, I reckon. And then we go back to the interview. Great quote coming up. The interview, which is in his house, where, of course, he's sort of slouching back on the sofa.
Yeah.
And he's talking about stuff and he says, this is quite cold. He says, my money's been accumulated in various parts of the world and I'll never give anyone the chance to blow the money I've worked hard for.
Weird.
So he's got his money stashed away all over the world.
Yeah. Not Fuck Gene, knows where. Not anyone. Various different holes.
Yeah.
Let's just say there's holes with money buried deep down in the deserts of Saudi Arabia to the jungles of Brazil and the Amazon rainforest. Right, I've got money in little holes in parts of Doncaster on the outskirts. You know, you could go anywhere. Even in France, I've got money. And it's been dug everywhere. And no fucker knows where all of it is. Not even Jean. Not even Jean knows.
I've got money stashed in thermos flasks in the woodlands of Northumberland. No one's ever going to come up with an idea as good as that.
Not even Harry knows. I did have Harry dig some of the holes, but I didn't tell him what they were for.
And then, after he said that, comes my favourite quote of the whole thing. He says, it's not that I don't trust people. It's just that, you know, I don't trust people.
Fucking hell.
Fucking great. He's just a one-man industry,
isn't he? That's really interesting. A really interesting insight. I mean, because he's such a sort of open bloke and so friendly and charming and all those things and energetic. If someone had asked me, I would have said, yeah, I think he is the sort of bloke who places trust in others because I think he's the sort of bloke who probably sees the best in other people, right? But really, secretly, there's an inner steel. Yeah. There's a steel.
Oh, definitely, yeah. But there's been that inner steel all the way through since he was a kid. I don't know what it is that drives him. I don't know whether it's...
He doesn't write that much about his parents. He doesn't, you know, he does, but it must have come from them in some way. Or maybe he just thinks the way that his dad lived his life, or maybe he felt that his dad didn't get his just rewards for all his hard work, and maybe that sort of informed him.
I think it's achievement. I think he's driven on by achievement, and one achievement leads to the next, and he's realised that there's no end to what you're capable of achieving if you really, really dig in and work hard and put your mind to it.
Again, like this podcast...
Very much like this podcast.
I mean, you know, only this week someone flounced off because they thought that we'd been harsh to them. in our feedback on Twitter and on the podcast, and they resigned from the IFS. But what did we could have let that get us down. We could have got upset. We could have given up. But instead,
took a week off. Yeah.
Instead, you devised a marketing strategy that has actually led to us immediately getting 14 new subscribers.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what I call Keeganism. There is a Keeganism that informs Top Flight Time Machine's operations, isn't there?
We are the Kevin Keegan of podcasts, I reckon. We started small. We started off like, you know, was it Doncaster he started at? Rotherham?
He started at Scunthorpe,
wasn't it? Scunthorpe.
That was like us when we were stealing studio time at the old TalkSport studios.
Yeah, and doing one episode every fortnight.
Yeah, and we didn't even have much. And at first we just didn't have any merch. Then we just had a couple of T-shirts. Now there's phone cases, hats, everything.
Yeah.
Bags.
We're going to soon be launching that stuff you can put on the side of your van.
Yeah.
Those fucking stick-on things.
Yeah, van stickers.
That'll be good. We need a van, don't we? Definitely. I think we've discussed this before.
We need a Top Flight Time Machine van to go on touring.
Like the Mystery Machine and Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, and get the whole thing like, you know, like the Led Zeppelin and then the Eagles and Elton John all had their own jets in the 70s that were painted in the band logos or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely need at least a van, if not a jet. Because at some point there'll be a jet.
We'll just scale it down.
Because I think we've got live shows that are more than possible in Australia. Because we've got a lot of fans out there.
Yeah, that'll be good. We'll do a month there.
Definitely Ireland. lot of British stand-ups go and do a month in Australia, you know. It's really common, isn't it?
Do they?
They all do, yeah.
Is it?
Really common. The other one they all do. If you meet any British stand-up, big or small, they've all gone out and done a month in Australia at some point.
Right.
And all of them, the other place that they go to, because it's very lucrative and everything's done in English and it's very rich, is Norway, weirdly.
Really?
All stand-ups, any British stand-up you speak to, they've all done a stretch in Norway. They'll go and do a few dates in Norway.
I thought you were going to say Dubai.
Nah. Australia and Norway.
Norway.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know of any listeners that we have in Norway, but I think the idea is you just turn up and the Norwegians have got more money than sense. Maybe that's it. And they're just like, we like the humour of the English. We will pay the money to look at their humour, listen to it and have amusement. I don't know why I'm doing them as German accent. I don't know what a Norwegian sounds like. Norwegians were massive in the 90s, weren't they? Because their team kept beating us all the time.
Yeah.
And they had, what's his name, who became the manager of Wimbledon. And it was sort of like they were a very dominant force.
With the wellies.
Yeah, they were a dominant force in the 90s. Also in the 90s, I copped off with one of the fittest girls I've ever copped off with. And her name was Lise, and she was Norwegian. And I met her in a club in Costa Brava called the Underground Club. So, and that really dovetailed with the fact that Norway at the time was so dominant in football.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So when I think Norway, I think 90s.
Yeah. Well, that's the end of the Keegan Hamburg Odyssey for this week. We'll pick it up again next week when Kevin goes to join the England squad and all that sort of shit. That's it. Thanks for listening. It's been another episode, I suppose.
It's been another episode. I've enjoyed it. I mean, now I've got myself... I hadn't thought about Lisa in years. Now I'm thinking about her and I don't think I'm going to be able to let it go. But how would I track her down? You can't just try in Lisa, Norway, and hope for the best.
Well, it's worth a try.
All right, that's what I'll go and do now then.
Take the event again.
See ya.